Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander listeners are warned that the following podcast program may contain stories, names and voices of deceased persons.
This is Outback Out Loud.
People and stories from Outback New South Wales.
Seeing my family on TV, seeing them sing, a bit teary. Yeah, nothing but love.
I have no regrets.
The people from the bush are real people. They're just wonderful people.
At a certain time of the afternoon, all these galahs come past and it's just beautiful.
If you've got time, pay Ningen a visit. Like, it's a great spot and we'd love to see you.
Yes. But Warren, it's just home. It's a beautiful little town.
I love Canamba because I'm here.
Outback Out Loud!
That's what I like.
This is Outback Out Loud Canamba.
I'm at Canamba Public School Library.
Okay, today I'm going to be asking you some questions.
Where did you grow up at?
What town?
I grew up in Canamba.
All your life?
All my life.
What are your most important life lessons you've learned in your life?
Probably try not to pick up a spider.
Can you tell me about the important people in your life?
Probably my closest friends and my family.
What are you proudest of?
I'm proud you are my friend.
What's your favourite food?
My favourite is Nutella.
Nutella? Why is it Nutella?
Because it's lovely.
My favourite sport is running.
My favourite thing is play with my dog.
Ride scooters and make potions.
What's your favourite colour?
My favourite colour is purple because I like the flower lavender.
What is your most favourite memory of me?
Of you. Probably you becoming my friend.
What's your favourite snack?
My favourite snack is cheese and salami.
What is your favourite thing of being a kid?
My favourite thing of being a kid is being spoiled.
We have heaps of trees and bushes. We have cows on our farm. We have Dippy, my horse, on there.
What is your favourite thing in Canamba?
My favourite thing would be probably going to a skate park.
My favourite thing.
Can you tell me about the important person in your life?
You, because you're my best friend.
What's the best part about being in Canamba?
Being the school library monitor.
My future holds independence.
Do you have any regrets?
I have no regrets.
Next up, Outback Arts Executive Director Jamie Lee talks about her life, her passion for community arts, and her own ceramic practice.
My mum is Darla, who's in the Nickname Hall of Fame. And my dad's Patrick, who was a shearer in this area for many, many years. I'm the daughter of a shearer and a nurse. And I grew up mostly on a horseback. Didn't have a dress unless it was a school uniform. Just spent my life in jeans, cruising around on the riverbanks on the horses, swimming in the river and hanging out with my mates. Yeah. So I went through to Year 12 in Canamba High and headed to Sydney. Wasn't sure exactly what I would do. Sat around and bummed on the beach for a little bit and figured I'd go to art school and applied to College of Fine Arts, which is a university in New South Wales, and actually got in. But by that point, I had a really nice job in Double Bay at the bank, so I had to leave a really good income to be a poor uni student. But yeah, I worked quite a few other jobs on the sideline to pay my way through and went through uni. I did 5 years in Sydney before returning home. I'd actually applied to a job in Outback Arts and didn't get it at the time. The guy that did get it only lasted 9 days out here, though, so by default, I landed at Outback Arts, and at the time I wasn't the executive director, I was a projects officer. But all of those experiences coming in into this back home and into this space and being able to just support and appreciate all forms is a really wonderful way to spend my days in terms of work. It's the most incredible space to work in, and some really cool projects. On my whiteboard where that lovely painting's hanging, I wrote Outback Arts Gallery. I used to do that a lot. I still sometimes do that. I write a bit of a dream on the whiteboard. Not for anyone else, just to keep reminding me why we're doing this. And the idea that Outback Arts could be so visible to the public means that not just the people we report to for funding could see us, but that our communities could see us, they could find us, and they could show themselves in that space. It's changed a lot of things for a lot of people. It's very much a creative centre where people just pop in, whether it's a social visit or an arts business visit, and it means that so many people have been able to elevate their little hobby into a really successful side hustle or a professional practice. I returned thinking that I would be home for 5 years and save some money so I could travel the world. I've been home for be more than 13 years now. A year or two into living back home, I met my now husband, who's from Walgett, and after the footy kind of pub scene, he was a smooth talker. He also knew my grandfather, and he used to compete with my grandfather showing chooks, which you would just not believe, because he doesn't look like a professional chook shower, but he totally is, and he's judging the show next week. I think his passion for his culture and his family really was something that was a stick for me, that it's a really good quality to find in a man, and I couldn't ever see that in the city. Finding someone out near home that had those qualities is really special. I hope that we can give our children even half of what we grew up with, because Trick and I combined have grown up with a really incredible childhood. We've experienced a lot of beautiful activities and life and hobbies, being able to live out here and have the amount of space we do. So I hope that we can give our girls just at least a little bit of that. I hope they ride horses. He probably hopes they play ball sports. And I hope that they can grow up with a love of country that we have as well. They already eat emu eggs in the season and love all the sorts of cultural things that they learn along the way. Elka loves anything to do with art, but she mostly loves her Uncle Frank's art, which is beautiful paintings of animals and things. So a few years ago, we went out on country with a group of women, and it was actually included Trick's mum, and we were over in Walgett, and we were on a site where we were actually with an archaeologist as well. So we were sitting on a site where a lot of the old oven had bubbled up to the surface, and actually you probably walk past them and see them without even realizing what they are until you're with people that can read rocks. But being able to see the ovens and learn a bit and sit in a space where people have cooked and done that so many thousands of years ago, and holding the clay pieces where the slab of clay was, they'd dig it down into the ground and there'd be a slab of clay that they'd cook on and cook around with. Those pieces, they kind of look a little bit like bricks. They're a bit of a gradient layer of colour in the texture of the, and it's like ceramics because it's obviously been cooked as well. So it's, yeah, very much like a brick. So being able to bring some of those stories into the clay work, and then I carve into that clay as well, which is a bit of a nod to the traditional carvings on country and in trees as well. Being able to make clay like that is quite a beautiful process as well. And I use black clay, which is really textural. It's almost like rubber when you feel it. It's a really nice medium to work with. But otherwise, if I'm not working with clay, then I'm painting. I paint topography. I love this place because it was my heart. It's my home. It's like many people you'll find that have lived here and experienced living here. They might move away and return. So many people return. I love that I have returned and have been able to be in this scene and work at Outback Arts. It's been a really, I was very fortunate to be in the right place at the right time to land in a job like this in my hometown. There's 15 other people in the state that do the same sort of job as me, but I can guarantee none of them are in their hometown on their home turf. And it's hard to describe why that matters so much, but it means that when I look at projects for this region, they are with the best of intentions and to either show our community in its best light, but also for those people to experience anything they possibly can, whatever that may be.
Check out Who's Down at the Coonamble Bowling Club on a Friday night.
My name's Trish Butler, and this is my mum Terry Jurgens, and we're here at the Coonamble Bowling Club.
Yeah, I'm also first vice president of the club.
Tonight we have the meat raffles, so people buy raffle tickets and have a chance to win meat trays, and we also have a members draw as well.
One member in the club will win $1,000 tonight. There's a $1,000 draw every Friday night. We also do bingo on Monday night.
Yes.
And one Monday night a month we have a charity bingo, which is played for money and run by individual organisations. Like you can, at the school had one last week.
Mm-hmm.
Rotary, Lions, Quota Service Clubs all have one, and it's quite popular.
And it's a good social night. Some Friday nights it's packed here, you can't get a seat at all. So it's good social interaction for people. Yeah.
My name's Nathan Thurston, and we are currently at the Coonamble Bowling Club. There was a lot of good and bad growing up in Coonamble, and being related to half the town was good. Like all of your mates were your relatives, so everyone sort of looked out for one another. A lot of swimming in the river, you know, footy in the park. When I left school, I moved to Dubbo, where I met my now wife. I think 12 years ago we moved back to Coonamble, and I wanted to come back as soon as I left pretty much. Coonamble's always been comfortable and familiar, so it's always where I want to sort of be. So currently I work with Clontarf at the high school. We work with the boys there, getting them through school and then employed once they finish, but I've just accepted a new job as AEO at the high school. So in a couple of weeks I'll be finishing up my current role and then going on with that. You know, our aim is to keep the Aboriginal students, you know, enrolled, attending, and you know, provide the support to get them to stay in school and in class, and then hopefully get them into meaningful employment. You know, you have some rough diamonds that you manage to help out with something, and just makes you feel good inside. Been doing it for over 10 years now, and I don't see myself wanting to change anytime soon.
Rose Alderton.
Ted Alderton at the bowling club.
Both born here. I went to school here and away to boarding school from high school. Came back here to work. I worked in the banks.
Geelong Farms at the post office, 31 years there.
The mailman.
Mailman. And on the telephone exchange. I used to work at the telephone exchange.
It was night boy.
Night boy.
In those days it was the old manual telephone where you'd have to ring in and ask for a number and they'd plug you through. But a lot of them were party lines in those days, like where I lived out in the bush. On our line there was four. I remember my number, our number was 131J, and it used to be on Morse code. Ours was three longs and a short. So when you heard that, that was our number on that four line. Yeah. But it changes over the years, like, you know, even this last few years, it's a lot of people have come to town. Whereas, you know, new people, a lot of people have left. You know, and of course, a lot have died off. As you get older, that's what happens.
My name is Lloyd Kennedy. Grew up here, went to school, made it to year 11, found a job, made my way out. So ground maintenance, landscaping, dwarf or stuff like that. Moved away when I was about 12, moved to Orange for a year. Moved from there to Campbell Town for about 4 years. And then came back when my couple of family members got a bit crook and sick. So yeah, good to see my old mates and family that again. Yeah, haven't seen them, I would have been close to 6 years. So yeah, good to see them again after 6 years.
You want to talk about cousins?
Yeah, the boys. So they are my first cousins. The lead singer, Travis, is my godson, which is pretty cool. I claim him a lot. Yeah, they're actually pretty good with their music and successful with stuff like that. So we're all musicians. We all grew up around guitarists and stuff like that. Our uncle David Dodd taught us a fair bit. Yeah, so we just learn as we go along. And yeah, you can't get better than them at the moment. So yeah, pretty cool. Yeah, that was on The Voice. Yeah, they auditioned. Sadly, no one turned around, none of the chairs turned around. They didn't make it as far as the first audition. Hard to explain, hard to describe. Like seeing my family on TV, seeing them sing, a bit teary. Yeah, nothing but love. Yeah, pretty cool inside.
I'm Russell, 64 years here. Yeah, still loving the place.
Tim Hall, I'm new here, 2.5 months only. I quite like it here.
So this has always been a good place. It's like the club's done a lot of work to make it comfortable.
It is a good club, Russell. I like it. Russell's an old school, but I'm new here, and I really feel like I've landed on my feet because the people are so friendly. The people offer help. You think you've got a 10-minute walk up the street to go and do shopping and come back? Forget that. If you meet someone or stop someone and talk to someone, you're gone for at least 3/4 of an hour. Just standing in the street talking. Just a chin wag.
Wellwood elder and ceramic artist Sooty Welsh speaks about his life and art practices.
My name's Sooty Welsh. I'm from Canambal and a proud elder of the Wellwood people, North West New South Wales. As a four-year-old, myself and six other brothers and sisters were taken away, were part of the Stolen Generation mob. So 4 years here, then we got taken to Sydney, where we all got separated, and then I spent 7 months in a home in Kellyville, which is north of Blacktown, Sydney. My brother and a couple of his former other homes that he was in, they came up here a couple of weeks ago and spoke to the teachers, then the students. A lot of the teachers and kids didn't realise what went on. I consider myself lucky because I can't remember any of my primary school years. And I always thought that was just natural, you know. A lot of people don't remember their primary school years, but I've since found out it's probably happened through trauma. Oh, I might have been about 30, I suppose, taking that to where I all got sent to their homes. And then for some reason or other, I started crying before I got there. So there's something still up there that's going out to where we spent time. It was only 7 months, must have triggered it. And to this day, I still don't know. Oh, well, I consider myself lucky. When I met a few of the boys that my brother spent a bit of time with in the homes he was at, hearing about the stuff that happened to him. So it opened a few eyes up at the school here, which is quite good. And this is where this truth really needs to be told, instead of just being swept under the carpet. And there's just so many people out there that don't realise what happened. They just see maybe some drunken black fellow or some bloke on drugs. Doesn't mean it's black or white, I suppose, but it's because of what's happened in the past, and that's their way of trying to deal with it. I have thought about maybe getting a hip tips or something like that. And one of my kids said to me, said, oh no, look, you know, it's probably not a wise thing to do because I might find out something I may have don't really want to find out about. But just listen to some of the boys, my brother, in other homes, some of the girls' homes, there's one horrific thing that happened down there, which I'd heard of. And a lot of the teachers at school, when I heard my brother talk and a couple of his other former boys from the home, they've thought nothing like this happened in Australia. And for a young kid, being 3 or 4 or even old, thereabouts, they were chained up to a trees of a night. supposedly for mucking up, you know. But not only that, they had a hessian bag put over the top of their head. Imagine it being a 3 and a 4 year old, chained up to a tree, and the grass is long, and the wind blowing, and the grass touching their leg. They'd want to jump a mile high. And so, you know, all of that playing up with their minds and all of the abuse they got besides that as well. You can see why they probably thought, well, maybe the drugs or even the alcohol might relieve some of the pain, but it never does. It always comes back. My brother and myself, we actually met up with our mother in Sydney, where she had to apply to visit us, and so we met her there, and then she was trying to entice us to come home. My brother was with me. He more or less come home within 6 months. He was a bit more, I suppose, say, countrified, if there's such a word, than what I was. A bit of a city slicker. So yeah, he more or less come home. Then within about 12 months, I think I may have thought, oh well, maybe it's time to go home and meet mum and the family, which I did. And when I did come home, I didn't really fit in with either the white people or black fellas in town, because of probably to do with my upbringing, the way I just spoke, carried myself and dressed and all that sort of stuff. So yeah, it was a bit awkward, and I didn't really get on in Canamble. So, and when I did come home, it was only for a visit, more or less. So it was a couple of years before I actually did come home. Still had awkwardness. I'll be 66 in a couple of, about 6 weeks or something like that. So it's up until a couple of years ago that I actually feel like I'm home. So it's taken me all these years. Oh, I remember going to school. There was probably only a couple of subjects that I was good at, and art was one of them. Woodwork, a little bit of metal. That turned out to be one of my hobbies down the track. It was a bit of woodwork later on. But first taste of art was probably at school, just doing a bit of painting. Didn't really know what I was doing either, but as a kid I'd always wait for the foster parents to come home with the wrapping around the meat stuff, the white paper, and I'd sit down and sketch there. But that was about the extent of it. Was just doing a bit of drawing, and then a few people was impressed, and takes a fair bit for me to be impressed, and I thought it was just average. I remember the first painting I actually did was just someone digging a hole. But then I never really got into any form of art until, must have been the mid-80s or something like that, where I was working at a cultural centre, and then this bloke was showing me how to make boomerangs and some of the traditional stuff. And because of me actually loved doing woodwork at school, I really loved it. And then just to learn how to make boomerangs and didgeridoos, or you know, yidaki or yiriki, I really loved it, because I just loved working with wood. And then when I was working at this cultural centre, I was starting to get some bouts of depression. And just a couple of workmates said, look, you've got to go out and do something rather than just sit, because I lived on my own, rather than just sitting around and having too much time on your hands thinking about certain things. I got in contact with this contractor, a director said that they was in Doonside. She had her own studio at the back of her place. So I used to go there, and they'd already had stuff made that was made from a mould, and it was just a matter of getting whatever plate cut and then underglazing. I thought it was all right, I suppose, because it was just getting me out of the house, and I never really thought much of it. But it wasn't until I come back to Canamble here, we had a natal quake where we made a kulamon, a plate, and a hand-built vase. And that's my first taste of hand-building. It was just something different, you know, experimenting something different with another form of art. With the clay, the first vase I made was like sort of in coils, where you'd get the clay and you just used to spiral it round and round and round and just build it up on top of one another. So that was my first taste of coiling, which I'd never done before. The kulamon, it was just a piece of clay sort of flopped, they call them flop molds, flopped in a PVC pipe that might have been cut in half. So that was a kulamon, and then a plate. But I thought the kulamon was a bit sort of dull and boring, because admittedly some of the people, traditional fellows, could have walked around and gathered fruit and stuff like that. But the mob used to use it for carrying water and even carrying babies. So I've actually went and made myself a mould. With the cooler ones I make these days, you could actually hold water in them. So most of my vases are sort of a shape much similar to a baobab tree. We don't have any around here, but we do have a few bottle trees, and I just love that shape. So that's the shape of my vases. And then in the designs, that's just inspired by some of the carvings that our mob did on the trees, which are called secondary scouring. So whatever I make, whether it be a coolamon or plate or vase, the designs on it are just inspired by the secondary scouring. Some of the trees were used for marking boundaries, burial sites, and a couple of other things. So it's sort of a New South Wales thing. Part of the practice of their culture way of life was the secondary scouring. Ceramics now itself has taken over my life, really. I leave work, I go straight to the shed. So it's sort of ceramics day in, day out. I've just got all this time to do what I love doing.
He is former Coonamble resident, Brian, down at the local Aboriginal Land Council.
I'm Brian King. I used to live in Coonamble a few years ago. I make it Coonamble now, and when I die, they're going to bring me back in a box. I'm a Yorta Yorta man. I was here for about 25, 30 years, I suppose. I was travelling around working, and I met my wife here. Oh, she caught my eye, but she was a nurse at the hospital, and I took one of my friends who was working with us to the hospital, and I saw her and fell in love at first sight. I asked her to go to the pictures with me, but she wouldn't let me shout. She paid for her own ticket. We lived in about six houses where we lived here, three on the east side and three on the other side. Then my daughter lives here now, she's still here. She wants me to come back, but I don't think I will because I love not where I am, and I'm working in the schools, 76-year-old, working in the schools as a teacher's aide. It's 10 hours a week, and I'm enjoying it, and it's just like another family to me with the kids and the teachers there. They are so fulfilling, you know, and enjoyment that I get from it.
Thanks for listening. To hear more amazing stories from Outback New South Wales, check out the whole Outback Out Loud series, now streaming everywhere.
We acknowledge and celebrate the first Australians on whose traditional lands we meet and work, and whose cultures are among the oldest continuing cultures in human history. Please like, subscribe, rate us, and write a review. The Outback Out Loud podcast was designed and produced by Signal Creative and is a collaboration between Signal Creative and Outback Arts. The Outback Out Loud community project and workshop series was designed and facilitated by Signal Creative. These episodes are the result of recordings and interviews collected by Signal Creative and community participants. You can find Signal Creative at signalcreative.net and Outback Arts at outbackarts.com.au, and you can find both of us on Facebook and Instagram. Audio production, sound and music design by Emma Hoy. Community liaison, research and editing by Caroline Wallace.